Hello, reanimated fans. This is AJ Conrad coming to you during daylight saving time, early hour time. I guess it's ending now, so it's not daylight saving time. It ends.
I can never tell. Are we saving the time in the summer or in the winter? When are we saving it?
Does it need
to be saved?
I don't know. But anyway, we're here. We're dedicated. We're talking about The Ones Who Live, and you just heard the dulcet tones of my intrepid co-host, Stuart Tiffin. Hello, Stuart.
Yo.
And so we wanted to chat just quickly about our awesome new intro. So, Stuart, get into it.
Yeah, it had been some years since we'd refreshed our intro music. So the original artist who made that jingle for us, Colin Diaz, kindly kind of just reimagined it based on the original piece that he'd composed. And so I hope you like it. It's Colin is a gifted musician. You can even find his band, the band that he's a part of, Tom Sandoval and the Most Extras, who you might have heard of that guy because he's kind of everywhere right now. He's a celebrity. So Colin plays in his band, and they are touring all over the country in April. So I think it's a pretty good show. I have not had the opportunity to see them live, but Colin is, like I said, a great musician. So anybody who has a chance to see him play, oughta.
Yeah, and thanks to Colin. We like to have a little bit of an update. I mean, it's been many years since he did the OG for us. So
I'm
psyched that we have a new one in there. So that's cool.
With all of our advertising revenue, you'd be surprised that we haven't updated the music. But
oh, yeah, I know. People would be totally surprised. But we're going to be talking about The Ones Who Live, of course, just fresh off the presses. And we get, you know, as cool AMC Plus members, I guess, we get early views of that. But before we get into that, there's a couple of little news tidbits. I guess we left Boston way too early, because had we stayed all this time, we could have been extras in the new Dead City season, because they're calling for extras. And
how many decades should we have stayed?
Stayed there just for this, Stuart. But what I really liked about this casting call is that it was, you know, it's asking for people, which some of this makes total sense, like to play extra like military or whatever. So they want people in like pretty good physical shape. So they're looking for like athletes and things like that. But the things that were the funniest to me is like, if you're like tall and weird looking, basically, like go, you're our walker.
I feel like they were looking for two very distinct sets of people. One of them is weathered and fit, you're jacked. And the other one was skinny and tall. And it's like skinny and tall, you can be a zombie. If you are muscular and weathered, then you can be a New York City gang member, I assume.
Yeah. So anyway, I just thought that was really kind of funny.
Yeah.
Another little, like, this is a kind of news tip. Everybody knows that Stuart and I like talking about our nits with different things and with whatever zombie mythology or walker mythology people come up with. And this is just a little, there was a little sort of, I think it was like a mini comic, just talking about how the whole like camouflage by zombie guts, by walker guts, is like a bad plan, because this poses a pretty huge risk for people to get infected. You know, I don't know that you and I have ever really talked. We talked a little bit about this, but, you know, I think we talked about it more in the sense that, like, if somebody had, like, a cut or something like that, you could get infected pretty easily this way. And also, if you're, like, you know, usually they're diving into people's, like abdomens and things like that. So it's, like, it's not exactly, you know, easy work, and there's bones and things you can get scratched on, things like that. So we've talked about it in those contexts. They go a little bit further in this, where they're just like, yeah, like you could just get a little bit in your eye and you're infected, or swallow a little bit and you're infected. And I guess I never really totally, but I guess the 28 days later theory, which they do bring up here, where it's like, you know, Brendan Gleeson just gets a little drop in his eye and goes.
Drop of crow saliva with blood in it.
Full on rage.
And I think we have talked about this. I mean, it's hard to remember because we've talked about these kinds of things 400 times, but I'm pretty sure we have. And like one of the episodes where it certainly came into focus, and, you know, it's fine to be all hindsighty with Walking Dead. They have not been consistent, and that's forgivable. But when Father Gabriel goes blind, like he gets a severe infection from being dressed in guts. And that was kind of when the show started to lean away from it as a Deus Ex Machina, which it definitely was. And like season two of Fear the Walking Dead, Nick, is it Nick? No, was it Nick? Was he the drug addict guy?
Think
Chris
so.
was the other one. Those two guys always get mixed up in my head. But he was basically in guts every episode and like was just an invisibility shield and he could go anywhere he wanted to. And we've talked about that before too. But Fear the Walking Dead, Dave Erickson, when he was showrunner, he definitely leaned into guts and you saw it kind of peter out in the Prime show. And then, but this article also points out that the Whisperers are just doing a very elaborate version of it, that also would have killed people if they had anything like an abrasion, maybe, because you're getting all those icky germs into your bloodstream.
Yep.
It's definitely worth pointing at and saying like this doesn't quite make sense. But do you remember the proposed alternate ending to 28 Days Later, the full body blood transfusion to cure?
To cure the thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they were like, no, this doesn't make sense. We can't do that because even one drop of blood killed, the taxi driver. So I think it's something that they have to struggle with as a story writer. You're like, all right, what's going to make the coolest story? But also, it does have to be consistent and make sense.
At least, Rick and Glenn did like poncho type things, and so maybe there's some idea that there's like a level of protection. They put it like over it. They had some idea, but people don't do that later. They're just like full on, hey, I'm just gonna hang some entrails off of me and I'll fine. But all that's well and good. But what we're going to be talking about today is episode three, entitled "By" of The Ones Who Live. And
Have you been
I
seeing the have you been noticing the naming convention for these episodes?
yes
So
yes
this is now By, and the first two were Days Gone, which is just it's an homage to the first episode of the entire series of the franchise, which was Days Gone By, obviously. And so here we are at By. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
No, all good. I noticed it too, but they're being very clever that
Oh, and this
way.
one, sorry, the first one was years gone by. Even cleverer.
So there they go, these super clever creators. But this is, the saga of Michonne and Rick continues, and I do have some things that are frustrating me now about this thing, as I'm sure you are too. And so let's get into it. So, where we left the last episode was that Jadis was basically threatening Rick, telling him that if he tried to escape with Michonne, that she had basically all the information about about Alexandria, about their people, and that she would make sure that the CRM knew about it and that they destroyed their people, destroyed the whole little community, and effectively blackmailing Rick. This is my, as I just, this whole idea that she somehow traded Rick for her place here, they do talk about, then they get into it in this episode. So we actually get sort of answers, or at least more, nothing that we didn't really totally know before, but at least they talk about it more than these like veiled ways. But to me, there's still like a big mystery surrounding the Jadis Rick thing. She's always been incredibly weird towards him, like slightly like hitting on him all the time,
Well, they
and
get into that in the after show a
they
lot, don't
do.
they? Yeah.
Like she's always done that. But it's not like there feels like there's like a bigger motivation here, although maybe not. Maybe she's just a little like unbalanced as she's always been. But this also, by the way, raised a lot of questions for me. It's like the CRM, having interacted with Jadis for however long, could probably tell that she's absolutely unbalanced. And I don't know that this is somebody, especially for an organization that is supposedly so concerned about vulnerability, about like their people, and especially their people in leadership positions. And ostensibly what they're trying to do is like rebuild the civilization, and they need absolute discipline. don't know that Jadis is your number one choice. And I mean, we saw how she like how she acts and how she acts in her new little role of whatever you want to call it, investigator. But I don't know. Like, this does not, again, this just doesn't add up to me. And so this always just it gives me a little bit of a head scratch. How do you feel about her?
I feel like you said, there's more to it. I think, because she referred, or she kind of implied that they had some sort of ongoing intel sharing relationship, but
Right, but
maybe that was just a reference to the fact that she knew he was trying to escape, and I don't know. Like, maybe there's not more to it, but there was sort of an implication that there was more to their relationship of like an espionage kind of thing. But I'm like, what does he even know at this point? He's a guy. He's on the inside, just like she is. I think what is really clear through her through all of her scenes in this episode is like she's born again. She's a real believer. And you know, she came into it at the same time as him, which I also find to be helpful intel. Like, it wasn't totally clear how much of a leg or a foot she had in the CRM before calling them up on the radio that day by the river. It seems like that was the first time that she got invited in, even if she had this resource sharing agreement with them that she talks about.
Well, the resource sharing agreement, I mean, maybe it was that she was protecting her people and giving them people she found, which just sounds like it kind of was. But she's just, you know, her way into the organization is Rick. Like, that whole thing sounds so bizarre and strange and doesn't.
It could have been like a quota, like, you know, I mean, and I don't want to make excuses for the show, but it could have been like she'd already given them 50
Maybe.
people, or he was the 50th person, maybe, or
But
something.
again, just to knock holes into this, what kind of things is she actually sharing with them? Again, she's super unbalanced. We saw her very strange ways, and her little community. I can't imagine that the CRM would find her to be useful. And as we've seen what they've done with communities that are useful, they actually take them out. And I don't know. Again, it just doesn't totally make sense to me, but I think we just ha I have to let it go. But I will
Again, with this show and the consistency, remember there was a helicopter pad at the trash yard where there
I
were people that
know this
like
is
they
ridiculous.
were that
Like,
friendly that they had a
this woman of the trash who builds like sculpture, like this whole thing doesn't make any sense to me that the CRM would like expend resources because she's such a great like fountain of
Look,
information.
here's what it is, HA. They have Pollyanna McIntosh, who is a good actor. They
I
unfortunately
know.
shoehorned her into a crappy introductory role that they're stuck with, and they've been working their asses off to get her out of that
Figure
ever
out of
since.
it. I
But they
know.
have to also like refer to it and you know, and be like, yeah, and I was a weirdo before, but now I'm normal.
Yeah.
So I think
She's still.
they're just undoing the damage that they did in that season by introducing the weird ass trash people and their made up language and all that stuff. So
Well, in
it's
any
just
case. I, like she's there. We know she's traded Rick. We've got like excellent acting between her and Andrew Lincoln, and Pollyanna McIntosh is really great. And these two have always had very weird but good energy. So you know, this is a good thing. She does reveal a bunch of things, and they do a flashback when Rick first is sort of like into the CRM, and she's just getting some frites in their little like community,
their
and
wig.
they're the wig they got her on. They got on her rather. And you know, so we have a little bit more information just about their ongoing
I like the scene. I like that Rick's response to this, which is days after arriving in the CRM or in Philadelphia. His, you know, he mostly just listens, but then he's like, "You brought me somewhere that I am not allowed to leave."
Right.
And her response is, "I saved your life." And so they're right from their, you know, what could have been a happy beginning of something new. It can't be for him because she doesn't seem to understand. She has no connections to people, right? But he does, like children or a child, and that he knows about. And so he, you know, of course, she's not going to be okay with it. But she seems to be, other than using them as leverage, in terms of threatening to kill them, she doesn't understand that people with family generally will move mountains to be with them.
Well, from her point of view, they're in this amazing community. She fully, just like she believed in her weird little artsy community, she fully believes in whatever this vision is. And this vision is that we find is that they plan to reset civilization, bring it back into a better place than it was before the fall of everything. And that is what she stands by. And, like, she is a fanatic. And
They have a
so.
500-year plan, is one of the things she says in this scene, which I like too. This episode is good for setting up. There's a few different things from different people, like Thorne and Beale and Jadis, who all say things in this episode that are like, there's a lot more to this place that you don't know yet. And Thorne especially, right? She, a few times she's like, I know everything now, and you're gonna know too, and you're gonna understand why we're doing what we're doing. And I felt like that was actually just right, just the right amount of intrigue for me to be like, oh, real? Oh, there's more. Okay, yeah, that's cool. I kind of don't want to know what their plan is because it'll suck compared to what, potentially. But I think it's still good writing to kind of tease that out.
And I liked, again, I liked their interactions. They always have great interactions, these two, and there's a lot of that. There's a lot of Jadis Rick in this episode.
Yeah.
And
In the minutes ago or in the present time when Jadis is threatening him, she also lets she reveals that she has like a dead, I don't know what it's called, but like a dead man switch or something. If she dies, there's basically a cache of intel that she has on, I assume, Alexandria, which I'm like, yeah, maybe you'd kill Aaron and a couple of other people. But you don't actually. I mean, maybe she'll be like, and they've all moved to the Commonwealth, and I know exactly where everybody is, and we could steamroll that too. And it's like, oh well, okay. If she actually has up to date information, that would be interesting to learn. But I assume that her intel is a couple years out of date.
Well, maybe not, because she's got a lot more resources now, so maybe she does have more intel than
If,
we.
but I mean, I, if they're getting their intel by flying around in helicopters, again, this comes back to the basis of how CRM gets around and does things. They're not subtle, So I feel like Intel is probably, maybe they'll come up with some sort of mechanism that CRM has that allows them to be really well informed without everybody knowing about them. But she even yells it in this scene. She's like, secrecy and security. I mean, yeah, helicopters and secrecy do not go hand in hand. So.
And again, with the helicopters in this episode. But anyway, and so we've got, Rick basically caught like a rat in a trap. And he basically is like, okay, I'm going to try to get Michonne out. But this is, again, one of the things that about this show that just, and they're trying, I get it. I get it. They're probably going to do a big reveal very soon. But they keep so much information and like, like maybe this is true that he totally knows Michonne well enough to know that she's not going to go without a fight, but he really like basically sets up this whole plan. He puts this whole plan in motion, implying to her that they're both going to get out together, and then basically leaves her a note saying, "Hey, I can't leave." But he doesn't tell her that, he just gives these like sort of broad statements like, "Oh, this is to keep you safe. This is so I can make sure here." But he doesn't tell her, hey, our whole family and community is being threatened if I leave.
Has he, does she not know that? Do you feel
He
like?
doesn't. She doesn't. And he basically is like, he doesn't tell her pretty like in like total, like absolutely clear terms that the reason why he is staying here is because like his like I think he implies it and then he asks for all of her stuff so that he can burn it, whatever. But and maybe they have this unspoken thing and she gets it, but he certainly doesn't tell her that it's Jadis threatening him, that it's not just this sort of overall like threat, that it's a very specific threat.
Well, by the time, by the end of the episode, when she finally has laid eyes on Jadis, and she calls her Jadis instead of Anna, which I think is what she was going by when she left the sh their community, which I thought was interesting. Now she, I think, probably can get a sense, and I think in the next episode they're going to have their come to Jesus meeting, and it'll all, hopefully it'll all come out. But
Well, and right
by
now
yeah.
he still doesn't know he has a kid. Like you still know about RJ.
Yeah, that's
And
wild.
so that's kind of wild. And so, but I mean, the things that were really great about this is the whole idea that Michonne is trying to pretend to be a bee in this, and that's
Not, no,
why
she's not pretending. She sucks at trying to be a bee.
she's really
My
bad at it.
God. All she does at the wall is make everybody look at her and go, "Yay, Dana, you're doing such a great job." Like, dude, you're supposed to be keeping your head down. Try a little bit. Jesus.
I know she's just like taking out the walkers with her little kill stick.
There's a bunch of soldiers watching her, including Thorne eventually. Like Thorne in both of those scenes is there. Why is Thorne in charge of the wall? That
I
doesn't
know
make any.
this seems like a waste of resources.
This is like putting a Navy SEAL on, like trash pickup on the side of the highway. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and there's a whole Grime 68 thing up there. What is that on
Yeah,
the wall?
hard to say. It looks really old. It looks pretty
Yeah.
faded. So, but yeah, what is that?
Yeah.
They keep showing it,
But nobody
showing.
says anything about it, so I'm like, okay, great.
Yeah, unless that's the number of times he's tried to run away.
Maybe it is. But they have, I do like the whole thing that they have set up here. So the consignees, or consignees rather, have their little, their setup. The walkers come in, and there's like this sort of wall with these just little, and we saw this with Rick. So this is like the same wall he was on. There's just a little bit of space, but it's enough to kind of block so that you have a moment to get them. Interestingly and weirdly, it's not foolproof though, because we do see that some of them aren't fully like
Yeah, the
deanimated. So
no kills are getting through. Like, it's hard to imagine that these weapons of theirs, these spinny stick
yeah.
stabby things,
Wooden.
can possibly not kill a zombie if you do it right. So that's a bit of a stretch, but it also seems to be like if they are able to survive these sticks, that seems like a bit of a weakness.
Yeah. So anyway, but Michonne's like kind of doing her thing again, very badly acting, trying to act like she's just one of the bees.
I mean, she says the right things, but it doesn't come across super believable, especially when she's talking to authority figures. But she's talking to this woman who is one of the other consignees, Cleo or something like that. And this woman is just saying to her, like, "Man, I'm glad that you know what you're doing." And Michonne, aka Dana, is like, "You don't know that I know what I'm doing." And then she like kills one zombie, rips its head off, throws that head at another zombie, killing it,
I
and
know.
then does like a ninja pose. And I'm like, yeah, you suck at being a bee.
Yep. Not the best.
And meanwhile, Cleo is just like, oh my God, you saved me. So yeah, dude, she's an A. Everybody knows it,
Everybody knows it. There's
including
no.
General Beale.
Yeah, I mean, there's again, she tries really hard to fake it, and it just isn't really coming over well. And she's drawn the attention of General Beale.
Out of
There's also
17,000 people. I love numbers, you know. So when Thorne trots that one out, I'm like, oh, okay.
well, for definitely believed in Rick, and he believed in Thorne, and Beale may have had some doubts, and seems to have ha definitely had doubts about Rick, and he promotes Thorne and gives Rick a book to learn from, and like he does give sort of a like, oh well, I thought about Okiafor this way too, so there's a little, he gives him a little bit of a consolation prize on that point. But Thorne is brought into the echelon briefing, and is sort of a, I want to say born again, or like something is after Thorne gets this thing. But like I do think that Beale is keeping tabs on Rick and on Thorne because of the fact that this was a risky operation that Okiafor was doing, that these two were risky specifically, and like Thorne definitely seems to be, towing the whole CRM company line.
And more than Okafor did, she
Right.
implies. Whereas he was like, let's change CRM from the inside, and that was his whole speech to them. She's like, I don't really agree with Okafor, and now that I know everything, I know what we're doing and I know why we're here. And she does seem to be, yeah,
Fully
like you said, born
converted.
again.
Fully converted.
I will point out that General Beale talks to when he like pulls them over and he's like, Sergeant Majors. That's grammatically incorrect. It's Sergeant's Major.
Ah,
And
great.
I also am not loving the rank structure here. Sergeants don't salute each other. They don't, NCOs don't salute each other, unless they've like decided to change how ranks work in the CRM. I feel like you should always have to have a military advisor when you're doing things that are vaguely military. And all these people are supposed to be like veterans or like at least Okafor was. He was Air Force before. So if they're setting up a military, it'll probably be based on that structure. It's not like they're generations removed from America, so they would probably still do things the way that they used to. But Thorne gets promoted to command sergeant major and suddenly is having Rick salute her, which is also between friends, that is such a douche move that I don't, no.
Does seem very douchey. It
it's
does.
pretty it's pretty it's pretty it's pretty douchey. And Beale is getting not fleshed out, but you're getting these extra like tips or hints about him. He has a Revolutionary War sword, which he talks about in at Okafor's memorial service. He gives Rick a book. I forget what it was about, but it's like Japanese, maybe samurai culture. Does that sound right to
I think
you?
that's what it is. That's what
And
it's.
that, and he also uses trots out some ancient Greek talking about like the poison is the cure or something along those lines.
The poison and the cure are the same things. And
Yeah.
basically says that he felt like that about Okafor, but more so about Rick in that way.
Yeah. So
So that
that these little tidbits of his character are fascinating. I think he's going to be a cool character. Plus it's Locke. I mean, what's not to love about this dude? What's his name again, the actor?
John, oh goodness.
John O. Goodness.
John, oh goodness. Hang on. I was going to say John Locke, but that's not what it is.
It's Locke. It's for sure Locke.
It's just always Locke. All right. I'm gonna have to look this up.
It's not in the short version of the cast list either. So he's not apparently Terry
Yep.
O'Quinn.
Terry O'Quinn. Anyway, Terry O'Quinn still, like, even in this, I'm like, man, that guy looks so good. He really looks great. I mean, he looks a little bit more weathered, and I guess we know now that The Walking Dead looks for that.
Yes.
But he really just looks amazing. He looks like just pretty much like no time has passed.
Yep.
Anyway, but he's, definitely keeping tabs on Rick. Thorne and Jada sound an awful lot alike.
Yeah, I think they're having the same sort of response to being pulled into the CRM, which would be hard not to also. Knowing the alternatives, if you don't have family, and in Thorne's case, what she's trying to still try to get back to South Africa, she's tried that and her boat capsized, and she ended up on a, like a deserted cruise ship when Okafor saved her. That storyline is still completely far-fetched,
Yes.
but
And I just don't, I mean, there's just this, as cool as Okafor was, the idea that she basically tried to kill him and not just like, tried, but basically got a piece of him that scarred him forever, and that he wouldn't have just killed her as a threat seems really, really far-fetched to me.
I
So
mean, yeah, they have so much work to do still to like make sense of his character from episode one. But that sort of story and Rick saying to Michonne later, like, the only reason I'm alive is because one guy kept saving me over and over again. I felt like that was those little moments are still impactful. So his character is still like a presence, even though he's dead for a couple of episodes now. But it was such a weird way to start the story, to like set you up to think this guy is like a catalyst. Oh, but also he's dead and you don't
Right.
really know what his vision was. So, okay, well, I guess we'll just figure it out. And now it feels like Thorne is not adhering to his vision, is moving in her own way or maybe in Beale's way. And so it's quite complicated, but that's a good thing. Like it's a story with a lot of nuance. Well, we'll see by the end if it all kind of makes sense together. So in this episode, we also have this introduction of disruption charges where they're apparently flying helicopters around and setting off explosives. Like the cost of this, mind-boggling. And they're
Right.
doing it.
Can we also point out that, we saw when Michonne in like the her episodes with I don't even know, did her little group of people have a community name? Were they just the Caravanners?
Oh, like in the wiki? I think
Yeah,
they
I
were
don't know
just
if they have like
caravanners.
actually name it, I don't, I don't know if they actually have like a name. But in any case, despite having very fewer resources, and in part because of the like the genius of Nat, they have figured out ways to like basically control herds of walkers in with much less fanfare and expending fewer resources than it appears the CRM does. Like this whole thing that they do, they have like they're traveling from Pennsylvania to the West Coast, right? And refuel several times. They get out there and but again, and this is what did they say? It was like a college thing. Is this supposed to be the whole college that fell?
No, that was Omaha. I don't think they say college. It's like the
It was a
Cascadia
university.
base.
They said it was like a university or something though.
I missed that if they just if they said that.
But anyway, the point is that they fly again using precious, precious resources that are not necessarily easy to get. They're flying people from one of these places to the other to do this thing, which doesn't totally have. I mean, I guess there's a bigger picture that we're not seeing, and I mean, Thorne kind of says that, like, oh, all the people are going to be together. Are we going to fail in this initiative? We can't let these walkers like do this. And then their whole plan is essentially like a similar one to what Nat was doing, but just a lot more complicated and dangerous. Because all he was doing was like basically, okay, I'm going to shoot this charge with these sounds, like the whole sound sticks or whatever the heck he was doing. And he seemed to be a lot more effective in what he was doing than this. This involves people being on the ground, pushing this thing through walkers, like a herd of them. And I don't know, it just doesn't seem to be, from a tactical point of view and from a vulnerability point of view, doesn't seem to be the best plan.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the RDIMM even was, that weird device that Thorne couldn't move, but Michonne did easily. It like had an alarm and it exploded, but it felt like not a very large explosion considering the amount of effort they were using. And there were no zombies around it, basically.
And then the other part is you have helicopters.
Yeah.
Like you have helicopters, just drop whatever you're going to drop into whatever point you're going to drop them. Like this totally made no sense to me. Maybe I'm missing something big. But what it did do was gave, we know that, this was sort of a test. Michonne didn't leave when Rick wanted her to. I mean, I honestly think he knows her well enough to know that that wasn't going to fly, because she's going to want more information about why. She didn't spend all that time in having Nat die than to like leave him behind, and she promised Judith that she was going to bring him back. So, of course she's not going to leave without answers, despite his fervent wishes that she does. And so, because of her bad acting, or meaning play acting, Thorne does this whole kind of weird, it is kind of a test slash interrogation. And I mean, she doesn't fully understand what the relationship is between Rick and Michonne, though she knows there's clearly something. I don't think they do a very good job at hiding it at all. And so
Yeah,
that
the
too.
smooching after the bomb goes off. I was like, you don't have time to smooch,
Also, you're
but
in the middle of a field. You're like it's a little smoky, but you don't know that you have full cover. Like, so,
yeah.
this is just, and Thorne's actions up until this point, it's like she almost killed Michonne and Rick almost killed her. And then there's this whole thing where like she's like, "Oh, Rick, I heard you draw your weapon." He goes, "Oh, I was going to give you backup." And it's like, "Okay."
She almost kills Michonne twice in this episode.
Yeah,
Like,
so again, there's just not, and I do think that Rick, and this is like the weird thing about the whole dynamics, the dynamics surrounding all these characters. I think Rick really does care about Thorne, but he also cares about Michonne, but he still doesn't trust Thorne, and he's not dumb, and so he's not going to trust her with like the deep, dark secrets that he has, and certainly not with the precious secrets that he has about his family and his community. He's been very, very careful to protect that, except in one instance. So let's talk about that later. But Thorne Thorne is basically testing Michonne and seems to be looking for opportunities to take her out. And Rick saves Michonne twice, at least in this episode.
No, the first time Michonne saves herself by saying she wants to learn about the secrets. I'm like, that's why you don't kill her? If she had said, no, don't tell me the secrets, you would have killed her. That means she's more of a B. I
It
don't
could have
like
gone. It could have gone either way,
it's
right?
just confusing to me. Like, wait, Thorne, are you concerned that she's too much of a leader or not enough of a leader?
Right. Well, I think Thorne is actually pretty torn because I think she, while she's not totally on board with Okiafor's philosophy, he did save her because of that philosophy. So maybe there's a part of her that's still trying, and she's still looking for other people to join, but she also realizes that Michonne is a threat. So there's like a lot of conflict going on there. But Michonne and Rick together, and again, this is like such a great a tribute and a like just th these two characters and these two actors have such chemistry. And they really like the Michonne and Rick when they're together and they're like fighting in the field, that's really fun to see. So I'm glad that they decided to give a little bit of fan service to that, to see the two of them acting as a team again. And that's why they're so powerful together. And again, that points to what Jadis was talking about, which is that, she wasn't so worried about Rick leaving because she was able to hold this thing over his head. But now that they're together, anything's possible because as a team, they are really unstoppable. And that's
Yeah.
just ongoing.
They are unstoppable, but after he tricks her into trying to leave and then like ditching her with the note, she
She's pretty mad.
basically is super pissed off at him for the rest of the episode. In fact, like to the point where she almost stops talking. She certainly doesn't speak to him very much until I think until next episode maybe. Like they don't really trade words very often. Because she is super pissed, not so pissed that she's not going to smooch with him in the woods after they set off a bomb, but she's very angry. And I thought that was like a good, because she's just like weighing everything. She's sizing him up constantly. She's always thinking, and I kind of love that. And she's, anytime, like when they go out to the base and Rick's like, yes, ma'am, or whatever. And she just gives him a look like, come on, what are you? She's constantly sort of judging Rick and weighing him up and seeing where things are going to go next. So in a way, like it's not that surprising what she does at the very end of the episode.
It is a, I mean, look, she's super mad at him, but she still really loves him and she's not going to leave him there. And that's why, because she is so dedicated to him and she hasn't forgotten. And yes, she is sizing him up. She is trying to figure out what's going on. And this is the part that it's like, just tell her literally what's happening, and then she can make that decision herself. Though again, she is not going to give up. We all know this. And so there is that whole dynamic that I think both of them play off really, really well. I think that she plays pissed really, really well.
And
So.
that's kind of how Michonne came into the show, and it's how she is at the moment, a little less unhinged than when she was all she wanted to do was kill the governor. Yeah. So I'm Cascadia Base. They're putting a lot of effort into this storyline this season. It's as Michonne points out, it's in the middle of nowhere. What's it for? And Thorne says, security. Intel operations and expanded resources. And I'm like, yeah, it's okay. It's in the Cascades. We're probably a hop, skip, and a jump from Portland, which is, as we know, the last remaining CRM ally. It's almost certainly that they're going to stage an invasion or a destruction raid from here to kill Portland, right? Like, that's got to be what they're doing here, just based on what they did to Omaha City. Omaha City? Iowa. Yeah. Either way, that's probably what it is. Maybe they'll turn it into something else just to throw a wrench in the works. But it's beautiful though. I wouldn't be mad if they set the rest of the show here, but I don't know where we're gonna end up next, because while Thorne is like, get her out of here, she broke ranks, I'm like, yeah, she did, but she also finished the mission. Like she went mission first instead of following orders. And I feel like that's not like a death sentence, or it shouldn't be.
Well, and also Thorne, her whole thing, it's like, I'm going to be on the ground and do this because we need to show that's what Okafor did, and I'm going to show everybody that that's how I lead. And and her big thing was, are we going to be delayed? No. And so that's what Michonne basically did, was like, hey, I'm just going to get this in there because that's what we should
Yeah,
do.
because Thorne was apparently too weak to lift this wheelbarrow, and Michonne just does it so
I know,
fast.
like so fast, so fast,
Yeah,
like
but
almost.
mostly I think Thorne is pissed that Rick helps Michonne after she said stand down. It's like, dude, just let it happen. It's gonna they're
Well,
gonna
I
be
mean,
they're gonna be fine. They're gonna do great.
I think that there's a lot going on here. I think Thorne obviously has feelings for Rick. She
You think
sees,
so?
oh, definitely. And I think that Rick and Michonne's, like, whether it's feelings like this has been her one ally, this is her one
Yeah,
person
she
that,
calls him family during this
yeah,
episode.
like, but there can be jealousy, it not,
Yeah.
even if she's not tied to him romantically, she said he's like her only tie. So the idea that Michonne is getting in the way of that or could somehow disrupt that. Remember, I mean, Thorne is the one that stopped Rick from escaping the last time. She saw the stuff that he was doing. She knows that he has other ties, and she's kind of jealous of it, I would say, or threatened by it. And so the minute that these two start acting in tandem and are like united, and it's very clear that they are on the field, I mean, she doesn't even see their smooch behind the tree. She doesn't need to see it to see how they work together, and that his loyalty is absolutely to Michonne. And I think that's why she's going to try to kill her and try to do it in this case when they're on the field, and maybe it would be friendly fire. And Rick sees her and basically puts this walker in front of it, which, probably not the best plan because he would have been taken out too, right?
Well, it's I think he'd be okay with that. Although it would leave Michonne kind of
Out.
stuck just like he is, but
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that there's some jealousy here on that front, that he has this tie, this very clear, strong, unbreakable tie to Michonne.
maybe.
And
I'm not sure that Thorne has seen through that yet. I think Michonne does a good job of saying, I don't know who this guy is, at
yeah,
her little job interview at the stadium.
Thorne can see that I just don't
She
think.
might, but I think when in that scene where she's thinking about shooting Michonne or Dana as she thinks she is, she is looking down the scope of her rifle. She all she can see is Michonne. She can't see the beautiful duet and ballet of carnage that Michonne and Rick are carving together through the zombies.
It
She's
is a
only
great ballet. It is great choreography. I was really.
Looking at Michonne in that scene, and I think she's just doing it because she defied orders. It seems really weird that she would have brought her along. Like, what was this? An interview? Like a test to see if this A could be part of their elite team of ass kickers? I assume so. But then why be like, oh, she kicked too much ass, I have to kill her.
Again, I think it's jealousy over the Rick thing, but.
It could be. It could.
And it's not, I don't think it's just jealousy. It's that she knows he's hiding something. She knows that there's something more to this relationship, and neither of them are being upfront about it. So it probably makes her doubt them even more and stresses her out even more. And when she's talking about vulnerabilities, and now that she's fully bought into this whole CRM philosophy, dogma, whatever you want to call it, she does not want to be called out. Like, she mentions a few times that she's not going to take the fall. Similarly, Jada says
Yeah.
things like that too.
Yeah,
So,
they're like, oh, this is gonna mess up my career.
right. They're
So
very much aligning these two characters in the same way that they're more concerned about,
status.
status and their place in this particular society than anything else. That I think is a piece of it too. And maybe this seems like a neat solution to Thorne. Hey, I can take out Michonne in the heat of the battle, and nobody will be the wiser. But Rick, of course, sees it. But also pretends that, oh, okay, like, we're just into this battle, like, pretends like he doesn't see, like, that what she's actually doing.
Yeah.
And then, the interactions between him and Michonne, again, he feel like there's this whole thing where he's not telling her the whole story. Eventually he does. When Michonne finally sees Jadis and is like, "What the WTF, Rick?" And he still doesn't give her all the detail, but he does say that their whole thing was threatened and this was the only way. And finally, we get a little bit of satisfaction on that point, which is, Nobody can really escape without having somebody sort of behind to protect them, to basically cover up the tracks, which is exactly what Rick tried to do earlier. And he basically told Jadis that he had set it all up so that there was like a fake body so that it would look like, and this is like before
It's
Michonne.
surprising how much he tells her everything. Like he does not
Right.
hold back from her. I find that maybe it's because he just assumes that she'll figure it out eventually anyway, or why he feels compelled to tell her exactly what he's doing.
Well, I think maybe in the interest of having her go along with the plan and that, so if he can show her he's being just completely truthful, that she's not going to go digging, because that's kind of what Jadis does.
Seems like it.
She senses a secret and she just keeps digging and she won't stop. She's like a dog with a bone. I think that's a piece of it. And also, I think he needs to be able to convince her that he's going to stay. And that this is how serious he's about it. He's just like, I'm gonna stay, but you gotta let Michonne go. And so I think that's a part of it. But we have this whole scene, and I will say, Danai Gurira's her facial expressions, like when Rick is saying these things, when she sees Jadis, are awesome. She's just like, there is this whole like, are you kidding me? kind of a thing going on, like. I went through all of this. I want to bring you home. She still hasn't told him about RJ, but she honestly cannot believe that this is the reality of what they're facing and what they're doing, and that he would actually stay, because they are definitely kind of like ride or die, and it's never been about this kind of thing. To see him, I think, as she would probably see it, to see him kind of broken by the CRM. And we saw it when she realized he had stopped trying to escape in the last episode when he shared that with her. But in this, you see it when he basically gives her all these reasons why he can't leave and why she should. And there's definitely also a moment between her and Thorne when Thorne's like interrogating her, where when she calls him family, the look on her face is like, oh, you're his family, kind of a thing. And so I think that there's definite like there's incredulity here where she feels like she's still not able to get the real Rick, like she's not having these honest conversations with him, like things are being hidden from her. And we know that Michonne doesn't react well when those things happen. She also, like Jadis, is kind of like a dog with the bone. She does not suffer fools. And so I kind of enjoyed all of that lead up and the build up. And look, they've been inconsistent sometimes with certain characters, but here I feel like every single one of Michonne's reactions are the reactions that Michonne would give,
Yeah,
including.
and if honestly, if we'd seen Rick in this kind of scenario before, it still feels like something he could do, but we've never seen Rick this like off of his axis, you know? Like he's still like he's, you know, he's kowtowing to these people because he's lost hope. But Michonne is still fully herself. So I feel like if we'd seen this 4 years ago, Rick would be where Michonne is. And you know, which is kind of an interesting look. But yeah, I agree that Michonne is being completely consistent with what we know about her character.
But also,
One of the things that happens in this episode that is like faith affirming for her, that kind of keeps her on course and believing in Rick, is her interaction on consignee walkabout day when she goes to Benjiro's portraiture shop at the farmer's market or whatever this area is in this town square. And she talks to the artist who carved her likeness and Judith's likenesses into those iPhones that we saw. And so this is the artist. This is the guy. This is the one who wrote "Believe a Little Bit Longer." And he even brings that up again. And he like knows exactly who she is, based off of, I assume, a portrait that he drew based off a description.
Well, and he didn't just draw one. He drew a lot of
Yeah,
them.
multiple, but. It's cool to see like the origin of this. It's not kind of not what I expected. I figured that this would be something that Rick figured out or did in the world in the wilderness, not just in like Philadelphia at a
Yeah,
farmer's market.
I thought the same thing. I did like this, except that there's now this person that does know about Michonne and Carl and Judith. And, like, So it's not like Rick has been, even though he got rid of all the portraits, even though he's, burning all this stuff, like very upset that Okafor shared with him that Beale knows where, like that's the other thing. It's like lots of people know that there's other things about Rick going on, things that would tie him into the community here if you threaten them. So like this, that he would be this open with this guy, I find slightly unbelievable. But I also did like it as a little vignette, and I liked Michonne's interaction because this basically gives her hope and insight into what that Rick didn't forget them, that he was fighting for them, but this was just like that something else is going on with him. And that's, again, and she's going to get to the root of it, but
I mean, now that she's seen Jadis, she has to be able to put the pieces together, I would
well, and he
think.
tells her, I mean, he tells her in that moment, he was like, hey, they're threatening. Basically, I can't leave with you because they will never give up. We can't leave together, but you can leave alone. And, but she still doesn't fully believe him that he, like, she cannot believe that he would ever give up. And I, that, whatever, like, I think that that's actually like, this would be unbelievable to Michonne. Everything she knows about Rick is the person that she fell in love with, that he would never ever have given up coming home to them. And so finding this and finding this sort of broken person, is she does not believe that this is really Rick.
I
And
don't, does he really tell her that they're threatening people? Because
yeah, he
what
does. He
point in the
says,
story does he do that? Is that.
doesn't he do it right at the end there? Like with Jadis, I thought he said, if I
No.
leave, if we both leave together, they will threaten everything that, they'll
No,
threaten.
it just says, I belong here. You don't. Everything we had is broken. He doesn't, he's still not even, I mean, I feel like this is so basic.
Yeah, just tell her.
So, I
Anyway.
mean, maybe he's like, oh, if I tell her, then she's gonna try and kill Jadis or whatever. But yeah, like if they actually work together, because right now they're not working together, right? Like Rick is trying to do shit by himself for what he thinks is the best outcome because he's given up on himself. But yeah, if they and if and when in this season he actually is like, no, okay, yeah. So here's what they've got. They've got the location of Alexandria, and Jadis has like a dead man switch. And Michonne, I'm sure, will be like, all right, so we kill Jadis, we destroy the intel, and then we leave. Like, it's that easy. Let's do it. And she just has to get him into a place where he's going to agree to do that. And then
You know,
job done.
it never really works out well. Making decisions for people without giving them the information
Right?
and letting them decide for themselves, like
Especially your spouse.
that never really works out for anybody
No.
in a positive way.
No. So I think. Yeah, they just need to have a talk, and that's clearly what they're going to do in the next episode if they're alive, which would be kind of surprising because they do just jump. Well, she pushes him out of a helicopter that is flying in a lightning storm. We don't know what altitude they're at. We
We
know
don't know if they're
nothing.
over anything,
Yeah.
like water or whatever. Though I do really love the idea that Rick, Rick's reactions and his ridiculousness. Michonne's like, you know what, man? I'm just gonna pull you, sure, and we're gonna get down to it, and we're gonna like resolve this. Like that is her solution, and it's a very Michonne thing to do. So I kind of love this. It's like the most Michonne thing to, like, she's so extreme and like, no, I'm not gonna take this ridiculousness that you're trying to
They're
pass.
definitely gonna be in hot water about this though, because they didn't like the helicopter didn't crash. They left the helicopter. There's no way to like paint this as an accident. I don't know,
He
maybe
just
they'll
fell
figure out a
out.
way.
He fell out and,
Oh, it was really bumpy back there and the
out. He
door
got
opened.
out, right?
So I don't know how they're gonna explain this one away, but
Well,
if in
we also know that they, because Thorne talked about the locator device for the
yeah.
CRM, that all she had to do, and the helicopters would find her, et cetera. So I'm sure they set that up. It seems like that's
Oh,
kind of
for sure, for sure. I think there was even a shot of the PBR or whatever they called it, in the coming attractions for the next episode. So for sure they're gonna do that. And for sure there's gonna be a knife fight with Thorne at some point since she's got that handy little knife in her belt behind her back. Plenty of good stuff to look forward to. This season I think is still punching real well. Even though we have some issues with how the CRM does business, Jadis's character in general. They're it's still like I feel like they're doing good work. I don't know if you noticed that the writers on this episode were a team, Gabriel Yanas and Matthew Negrete, who was, I believe, the showrunner for The World Beyond. Last time it was Nana Nkwete and Channing Powell, who's the showrunner for Tales of the Walking Dead. And yeah, which is
Kind of
super
nice
cool.
to see all these people involved in this particular endeavor. Nice to have it all being tied together.
Yeah, the next episode next week is going to be written by Danai Gurira. She has a sole credit
Nice,
for the
nice,
writing,
awesome.
even though she and Andrew Lincoln and Scott Gimple all had a shared credit for the pilot. This is going to be D next episode will be Danai's, and it's kind of fitting that it's going to be where she's reading Rick the Riot Act
Yeah,
for.
no, this is great. I'm pretty excited to see this. And I look, I despite my little nits, I am really enjoying it. I am enjoying it a lot. I think these two characters are fun. I just don't like all the kind of, the sort of breadcrumbs that they're laying that are kind of annoying. Even honestly, there's like the whole interaction, the first interaction between Rick and Jadis in this where he's not the first interaction, but the interaction where he's like basically, cover up for Michonne leaving. And, Jace is like, how about you just kill me now? And it's like, well, dude, he can't because you've set it all up so that he can't. So even your little weird threats where you're like kind of like egging him on are very odd because like there's no way he's doing all this because you have trapped him, right?
So on some level, you think, I mean, it's pretty clear that she, it's actually not clear because Jadis is a mind messer with person, but there's possibility here that it's a love quadrangle between Michonne, Rick, Thorne, and Jadis on some level. Is
On
that?
some level, but I don't know. I mean, I feel like Jadis is just really strange and she likes having power over people. And there is also that piece that you said, which is that I don't think she really understands relationships between people, clearly not. And so like her theme keeps being like, it's not that bad here, Rick. Come on, like it. You know what I mean? Like she wants some kind of like credit for bringing him to what she views as this like paradise, right? And that she chose him. And so I don't think it's a mistake that she chose him because she could have probably chosen Michonne, right? So she chose Rick to save. So maybe there is like a line there, but it's a line of romance in only the weird way that Jadis can interpret it, right? So I do like how Rick made fun of her haircut. That was pretty
He does call out the bowl.
yep.
That was good.
But I think we'll see all this play out in the next episode, this weird quadrangle of strange loves and connections. So I don't know. I'm loving the whole thing. I really can't wait to see what Danai Gurira's writing is about. And it feels like there's gonna be a reckoning, right?
Oh, for sure. Like all that silence that Michonne was serving up this episode is
Oh,
about
yeah.
to be reversed, and she will. I think she's going to have a lot of talking, and she's going to be just giving some instruction, I think, in the next episode. And Rick will have to be on the defensive.
Yep. So.
But looking forward to getting into that when it comes around. And so in the meantime, if you have thoughts about Rick and Michonne's show, The Ones Who Live. Give us a holler. You can email us at reanimatedpodcast@gmail.com. We are online. You can see or listen to our other episodes at reanimated.podbean.com. And I think that's those are the deets. So give us a shout. And thank you for listening and enjoy our outro music, which is the same as the intro music, but
Yes.
it's so good you can hear it twice.
Thanks everybody for listening. Ciao.
Toodaloo.